On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Dylan DeMarkey, the co-founder and CEO of Eventual, a startup helping carriers and homeowners predict climate-driven pricing changes. Dylan has spent much of his life thinking about weather. His experience sailing is connected to his life as an entrepreneur, so we'll get into all of that. Welcome, Dylan.
Peter, glad to be here, and thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, I always like to start out by talking about the person before we get into the company and the broader issues of our industry. And I saw that you grew up in Hawaii. That's pretty cool just by itself, but also I guess that makes sense. In Hawaii, you'd be on the water. You spent decades sailing the open seas. What was that like?
Hawaii is an amazing place to grow up. I was actually just there for a few days, and it reminded me how much it contrasts with New York, which is where Eventual is headquartered and where I and the team spend a lot of our time. Yeah, as you mentioned, I was a sailor and spent a bunch of time on the water. I think observing wind and water temperature and wave patterns over the decades definitely teaches you a lot about how weather is dynamic over time. Whether that's a climate problem or kind of a more localized problem, it's definitely a driver of why we started to build Eventual, and certainly an underlying driver of some of the problems that we're solving at Eventual, which are insurance volatility, insurance unpredictability, and building products that make those dynamics more predictable in the long run.
Yeah. So did you have any harrowing experiences out on the water?
I've definitely had some masts and sails fall down. I mostly sail small boats, you know, lasers and 420s and some small hydrofoil boats, a couple small collisions here and there, but I live to tell the tale. So nothing too crazy.
Yeah. You know what's interesting about Hawaii? Maybe just I'm you know, not a novice about all this, but I was struck by how deep the water gets, how fast it gets so deep. And then you realize these are the tallest mountains in the world when measured from the bottom of the ocean, which is what, you know, where they started. Because, you know, you go out a quarter mile from land and you're, how deep are you? Half a mile already. It's incredible.
Yeah, they're definitely subsea mountains, you know, and obviously volcanic. So while that stat is definitely an unusual one to measure mountains. If you do lean on that stat, they are the tallest, which is astounding. You know, occasionally there's some snow in the winter when we get some wild weather on a couple of the islands. But yeah, the ocean is pretty deep. And so it's a pretty wild place to see when you're on the island.
Yeah, just one last thing about the state of Hawaii. Like I'm on the East Coast most of the time as you are. So heading out there is a long journey, and you get there, it's you know, it's tiring. You get off the plane and it's like these trade winds, just, it's like a caress on your face, you know. It is so nice to be out on the water there. I can imagine you probably took it for granted, but I just think it's just an amazing place in the world, really. That soft air, I remember that on my face a few times I've been there.
Yeah, you step off the plane and the humidity definitely hits you first. Your hair gains some volume, and then you notice the trade winds, which, you know, in my view, were a little bit more consistent in my youth and today are a little bit weaker. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's definitely makes Hawaii a lovely place to sail and a pretty good, you know, world-renowned racing mm-hmm. venue as well, just given the predictability.
Yeah, so all of that experience, you mentioned how it kind of influenced you, but it probably had to, just paying attention to the breezes and weather and so forth. But then you went on to mechanical engineering and economics at Yale, and then you got into real estate. Talk about some of those things you went through in your career earlier, and then how it led to where you're at today.
Yeah, so Eventual is the company behind Premium Lock, a 3-year price guarantee for home insurance in the US. Pretty much everything we have built and are building here is inspired by dynamics and problems that I saw at Blackstone as a commercial real estate investor. In that role, I deployed $3.5 billion across mostly rental housing, but some industrial and hotel and office buildings all over the US, and especially in the Sun Belt. And, you know, I showed up to that role thinking a little bit about how climate change can impact the price of real estate or rents or multiples on real estate. You know, growing up in Hawaii, my family had always discussed longer term climate risks like sea level rise. You know, my childhood home is a couple feet above sea level, and is my family's single largest asset, as it is for most American homeowners. So I certainly showed up to there, you know, to Blackstone with some thought of how climate impacts real estate. But through that role, I think I quickly found out about this concept of kind of climate pragmatism, which is that for asset owners or investors or just simply any real estate owner, the vast majority of Americans really, maybe they think about climate change to some extent and with some frequency, but they're really not taking much action. It is just kind of an unfortunate truth that I observed. And it is, you know, quite pragmatic and in some geographies, pretty rational. But what I did observe, you know, while that was frustrating, I did observe that kind of in summer 2022 leading into 2023, insurance pricing started to become dynamic to some extent in our portfolio, but also in the portfolios of some of our peers and others in the investing community. Historically, we had never really talked about insurance. You know, it was our maybe sixth or seventh biggest operating expense line item. You know, our risk advisors and consultants would kind of handle that and our renewals and what sort of insurance we need. And the loan docs would sort of define all of those sorts of terms. But we started talking about insurance a lot over that time period. And what happened driving those conversations was that the price of insurance just started going up very quickly. Just to give some rough numbers, you know, to insure some two-story Miami apartment buildings, maybe were $800 a unit a year at that point. And pretty quickly, we started to see the price go to $1,000 to $1,500. And, you know, for newer glass skyscrapers, it could be $2,500 a unit a year. And so that was a really dramatic change. And so insurance, all of a sudden, almost overnight, started to matter for the broader real estate investor community. That all of a sudden is maybe your fourth or your third, and in some extreme cases, your second biggest operating expense. And so there were certainly deals in the US Sun Belt that died as a result of investors not knowing where the price of insurance is going, because those investors commit to their assets, not just for a year, but for, you know, 5 to 7 years on average, or a decade plus for some kind of perpetual insurance vehicles or for homeowners. We observed, and I observed, this frustration that we have these one-year unpredictable property and casualty insurance forms that would just consistently keep resetting with seemingly kind of random price changes from year to year. And so that timing mismatch that I observed at Blackstone is fundamental to our idea for Premium Lock, which is the product that we sell. And it was the inspiration for the question we asked, which is, wouldn't it be nice to have multi-year predictability in a major cost of operating real estate, which is insurance, so that it's more term matched? Commit to your asset for a few years, get your insurer to commit to maybe not an exactly the same price, but at least a more predictable price for several years rather than 1 year.
Mm, really cool. You can predict with, so it's called Premium Lock. Eventual is the mothership company. Just a quick aside, how do we'll talk about how agents get involved and so forth. How do you get to Premium Lock from Eventual? How does that, are they separate URLs or?
Yeah, so our, you can go to premiumlock.com. You can go to eventualclimate.com. Okay. Eventual is just the company behind Premium Lock. And so the product, which we're happy to get into in a minute here, is distributed by independent agents all across the US. You know, California, Texas, Florida are core markets for us because of kind of the obvious insurance pressures in those states. But also the Northeast and the Midwest are really fast growing geographies for us as well.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. We definitely want to get into the role agents play in it. But how did you create this system where you were able to predict? Like, how does the model work? Given all the uncertainty in the world, you mentioned climate change. Yeah, that just seems to be a a continual thing. The convective storms in the Midwest. I mean, it used to be like a coastal thing. It used to be just California had earthquakes. Now they got these crazy fires. But they, you know, certainly those states you mentioned with the coastal issues with rising, you know, my house here in St. Pete, Florida got flooded in 24 with Hurricane Helene. So I'm, you know, I totally get what you're saying. You can see the water is a lot higher now, and it doesn't take much of a direct hit to get the surges coming in. And so there's flood, there's wind, there's earthquake, it's fires. It's, wow. How do you make this work?
How Premium Lock works is that we predict for every address and for every carrier in America, how much we expect those carriers to raise the price of insurance over the next 3 years. We then guarantee the accuracy of that prediction. And so Premium Lock, in essence, guarantees for an insured that the price of insurance for that specific customer will not exceed a specific price over the next 3 years. So behind the scenes, to predict the price of insurance, there are 5 or 6 main buckets of inputs that we have to predict. The first one is macroeconomic factors. So mostly that just comprises construction costs inflation. For a given homeowner in the US, carriers can change the price of insurance in 2 ways. They can change the rate online. So for a given amount of insurance, they can charge more for that coverage, or carriers can recommend that you need to buy more insurance. And that's directly a result of construction cost inflation. So it has nothing, as all of your listeners likely know, you know, it has nothing to do with the value of the land, which, you know, in the US is a big share of the market value of a home. It is just the cost to replace or repair the sticks and the bricks and the labor to do so for that parcel and for that structure. And so construction cost inflation, there are a bunch of companies that provide predictions as well as really detailed granular historicals about where construction cost has gone. Mm. So that is a huge driver. Really from 2021 to 2024, the vast majority of increase in the price of insurance for admitted lines US homeowners was driven just by coverage A going up, the you know, construction cost inflation increasing dwelling coverage. Mm-hmm. Another bucket that we have to predict is carrier profitability. And so fortunately in the US, there's great reporting on profitability for admitted lines US carriers, also, you know, by segment. And so you tend to see that unprofitable carriers logically have pressure to raise the price of insurance faster than extremely profitable carriers. So just kind of standard competitive dynamics drive a lot of those. Some regulatory dynamics are also very important. Today, Premium Lock, we sell exclusively on admitted lines homeowners policies. So an HO3, HO5, DP3, you know, condo unit owner policy, and how each of those admitted lines forms is regulated in each state varies a lot. In California versus Florida, which I think the media tend to announce in similar context, those could not be, you know, more different insurance states. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Florida was super dynamic and repriced really quickly in 2022 as inflation started to happen and a few other things happened. As a result, you know, they were one of the hardest markets in 23, 24, and then really started to decelerate in 25. And so today, the price of insurance in Florida is only growing 7%. Year over year last month. Well, versus good. In California, the price of insurance has grown dramatically and a few years later than Florida, mostly because of how it's regulated. There are a few other inputs we look at, you know, including climate and weather dynamics. But again, it's a 3-year product. So it is pretty hard to predict how some longer term climate trends will happen over kind of a relatively short period, like 3 years.
Okay. So this is... I know you said admitted. That was going to be one of my questions. The not admitted market is a whole other dynamic, of course. But is it for personal and commercial or just personal right now? Personal?
Today, the vast majority of our growth is for homeowners policies, so personal lines. We do take a look at commercial real estate. So, you know, our agents who are our distributors will send us a deck page and an SOV, and we'll take a look at those, but it's a very small share of our business. Mm-hmm. We like homeowners just because of the consistency across forms and carriers. You know, our product is carrier agnostic, so insurers can take it with them from carrier to carrier during the 3-year term. And so remaining on pretty homogenous forms is pretty important to the business today.
Yeah, that's good to know. I'm sure agents would appreciate that too. Let's talk about the role of agents. How do you work with them? What role do they play?
So agents are our distributors. You know, early days, we experimented with a lot of distribution methods, as I think maybe many founders of InsurTechs who come from outside of InsurTech do. They think that there may be more efficient distribution direct to customer. And pretty much everyone finds out that it's really hard to acquire customers at a reasonable price unless you go through the agent channel. Insurance agents are just excellent at doing their jobs of connecting with homeowners, being trusted sources of information and products. And so we lean super heavily on that channel. Today, we have found that agents don't really view Premium Lock as, you know, some fourth kind of supplemental product to sell after they sell the home insurance, the auto, the umbrella, and then maybe they'll sell like a deductible buy down or a Premium Lock or a home guarantee or warranty. That's not really how we position ourselves. Agents today are super excited about Premium Lock because it's a fantastic marketing tool to grow their core business. What we have observed is if you show an ad to a homeowner that says, hey, ABC Insurance Agency, we sell home insurance. Customers see that every day, all day, especially if they're filling out kind of lead gen sites and getting contacted by dozens of agents. But if you show an ad instead that says, ABC Insurance Agency, we sell home insurance, we also have a 3-year price guarantee for our home insurance policies. The customer overwhelmingly chooses that second ad because A, they have never really heard of a 3-year price guarantee for home insurance, and B, it's pretty self-explanatory and it makes a ton of sense to them. They think, wow, if I had a 3-year price guarantee 2 years ago, a year ago, 5 years ago, I would have saved a lot of money because they all know that the price of insurance has gone up dramatically over the last few years. Mm-hmm. And so by selling Premium Lock and making it a core part of an independent retail agent's either renewal process or just point of sale for a new homeowner policy, they tend to acquire customers at a lower price. They tend to have better conversion rate on their marketing, and they also tend to retain customers for longer. So converting a 1-year customer into a 3-year customer obviously makes the retention side of the business increase dramatically, which makes it easier to kind of have net growth rather than just churning through a low retention year.
And is the price tied to the premium in some way, or is it a set fee?
On average, Premium Lock customers pay us about $20 a month. It varies mostly by geography and by carrier, because those are really important inputs to our prediction model. The other feature that we share in Premium Lock is this kind of payout threshold. And so for each customer, they continue to pay for insurance as usual. And then if their price of insurance exceeds a specific threshold, we will pay and reimburse them for any premiums that exceed that. And so that payout threshold, that is just literally where we predict that their price of insurance will go over 3 years. And if we're wrong, we will pay the overage. And so that is fundamentally dynamic and variable by property, even within a same city or a same state.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what's been your progress so far? How long have you been working at this, actively in the marketplace, and how many agents are involved with you, and what's been the response?
We founded the business in 2023. It takes a little bit of time to get a new product like this off the ground. You know, it's always fun being in kind of a heavily regulated, complicated sort of industry like insurance and building a net new product. Fortunately, we've been growing quite quickly, almost exclusively through the independent agent channel. Today, we have customers and distribution in, I believe, 21 states as of yesterday, products available in all 50 states. We're doing thousands of monthly quotes, and we're really happy to see, you know, hundreds of agencies appointed and selling this thing. So we like the growth, and I think it reflects that we're just building something that's useful for customers and something that customers have fundamentally wanted, but maybe didn't know that they wanted until they've seen the product, which is a pretty hard thing to do. And so we look at a lot of other sorts of corners of finance and insurance for inspiration. You know, the main one is just looking at the lending universe, at mortgages. You know, a 30-year fixed rate mortgage is a fundamentally American construct, and it adds a ton of value in a world where interest rates are pretty unpredictable. You know, nobody knows what rates will be in 6 months or 12 months. Like, historically, it is one of the most incorrectly predicted things of all time. And so a 30-year fixed rate mortgage gives a lot of inspiration, where I can look and say, wow, it would have been lovely to have a 30-year fixed rate insurance policy that's term matched with my mortgage. That's an extreme example. And I think there are a variety of reasons why carriers should never sell that product. They would pretty much all lose money immediately or have to charge too much for customers to be willing to pay for that. But on average, a fixed rate mortgage costs a little bit more than a floating rate mortgage. And so we look at insurance and say, it would be nice to have at least a couple of years of predictability and get more in that direction of, hey, let's have 3 years of better predictability, even though we can't quite get to 30 years. We also look abroad. You know, Japan has had a very interesting history of multi-year insurance. You know, they were longer duration a while ago, and today the duration has shortened up a little bit, just given, you know, how some of these long tails can be priced. But also in the US, there is some precedent. You know, on the commercial side, there are a few carriers that for select customers will offer some multi-year policies. You know, some regional auto insurers have tried and to some extent successfully offered some indefinite term rate locks, which maybe timing wasn't great for a few of those guys, given the environment that they entered into in like 21 and 22. But we take inspiration from all of those incumbents, and we've combined what we think are the best aspects of it for customers and also the best aspects of it for us as, you know, the sellers of this product and the pricers of the risk.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting how, you know, as homeowners and businesses, we're paying so much for insurance. You said it with the real estate portfolio world, how much is going to all different forms of insurance. You know, we're not even talking about life and health and all those things you need. So it stands to reason when there's stresses, that there's been a horrible hard market for a while in a number of areas. And so you have these solutions that come up, things like parametric insurance is another example. The not admitted market has just exploded. The E&S market has exploded. And I think this premium lock's another example of how, you know, you respond, entrepreneurs respond to market stresses like this, you know. Certainly, the climate's not going to get any easier. And can you put on your, you know, your wizard hat and think just down the road, not just what you're doing, and maybe even just what you have in your mind down the road, what could possibly be this combination of you know, financial tools and insurance, traditional insurance, to respond to what's coming, which is probably more natural disasters.
I'll push back on the phrase natural disaster. I think some of these are getting to be pretty unnatural, and I'll call them extreme weather events, which is, you know, someone once yelled at me for using that term, and so I will pass on the favor. You know, some of these are natural, and some of them are definitely doing pretty unexpected frequencies, severities, depending on the peril. But broadly, I would say that over the next 5 to 10 years, I refer back to that kind of phrase of climate pragmatism that I mentioned at the start. The world is certainly dynamic. The concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere is certainly increasing. Temperatures are increasing. Weather patterns are certainly changing. I think that's pretty much indisputable at this point. But again, you have to, as a seller of products or services, you know, whether they're financial or insurance or not, you just have to be really, really aggressive in saying, what do customers actually care about? For us, our customers are US insured homeowners. And those customers, we have found, aren't really asking, is my insurance going up as a result of climate? Is it as a result of regulators? Is it as a result of reinsurance or my property characteristics, you know, my roof getting old? They're not really asking that. All they're saying is, I want to pay less for insurance. If I can't do that, I would like to have more predictable insurance pricing. That's what we've observed. And so being radically pragmatic about what people want and are willing to pay for, I think is still like a little bit misunderstood today. The second thing that I have observed and I think is starting to happen is people want clear guidance on what is coming. And so while today, if you're a US insured homeowner, you're buying insurance, you have no idea what is coming. No one's telling you, the carrier is certainly not telling you, we think that the price that you're paying for this home insurance policy today is going to increase 40%. No one is doing that. And so there's actually a lack of price discovery happening and a lack of clarity on what efficient insurance pricing should be today, because you only are getting a snapshot, not a prediction. So we're really excited about our role in the market in making customers more aware of their financial exposure to climate change. People, again, really only care today about how their personal finances will be impacted about, you know, by climate change. That is fundamentally what people are willing to take action on and to buy products to solve. And so that's kind of where we fit into that picture, is we are literally telling customers, we expect your insurance pricing to increase 5%, decrease 5%, increase 50%, you know, a whole variety of outcomes for specific homes in specific corners of the US. And that is radically valuable. There are certainly cases where customers have looked at our predictions when they're buying a home or thinking about refining or moving and really taking a hard look at what the world looks like if they're in a place where insurance continues to grow, you know, 20% year over year, which it is today in California. So I think price discovery is really important. I also think more dynamic pricing is critical as well. And so that's also, you know, a role that we like to fill. Something that we are not doing today, but some of our peer companies are really excited about and in the early days of achieving, is mitigation of risk related to climate risks or severe weather events. And so actually reducing the probability that a home burns down or that a roof flies away with hardening of the home or, you know, cutting down trees or putting a fortified roof system in place. You know, those sorts of things are really expensive today and don't see much ROI today because carriers really struggle to understand what's happening at the individual property level. But I have hope, and I'm starting to see leading indicators that some companies are going to show real financial ROI on investing in hardening, which is inevitable and pretty important to keeping insurance more predictable and more affordable.
Yeah, those are really good points, Dylan. You know, it's kind of a shame that you didn't mention a carrier prop. Like, a lot of people mistrust the insurance industry and insurance carriers. You mentioned a bunch of dynamics that go into pricing. It is kind of a crapshoot for the underwriters and the actuaries without more data that, you know, things that you're looking at. But frankly, there's a lot of mistrust, so people feel like it's all just a money grab. And all the news media coverage, and it's been a year now since the fires in California, it just seems to be blasting the insurance industry for cutting and running. And I always say, you know, guys, if this was so profitable for the carriers, why wouldn't they stay? Why wouldn't they stay in Florida? Why wouldn't they write coastal property? If they can generate so much premium, it's just odd. But I think you're right, that education piece. I've had a number of InsurTech entrepreneurs like yourself on this podcast. They've talked about the mitigation of risk, like you said, and you're taking a different swing at it. But hopefully, you know, the education piece, that we're all kind of in this together, you know, it's not, carriers need to make money. What is reasonable profit? But man, there's a lot of mistrust all around.
There is, you know, as a former insurance outsider who is now an insurance insider, I think that insurance really gets a bad rep when you bolt, you know, toss it into the bucket of kind of the finance community or other communities, which is really unfortunate, because once you're inside the insurance community, you see that home insurance and P&C in the US is an extremely competitive, pretty non-differentiated business from the carrier perspective. Like, it's really hard to compete and make money in that business. Like, I think it would be, on the education piece, I think it would be extremely helpful if, especially in California, some of these extremely large, or maybe the largest market share carrier in that state, publish their profitability. Because in 22, 23, 24, those numbers were astoundingly scary. And I think it would help build a lot of trust with homeowners, because they would see, wow, I'm paying this in premium. I am paying not enough in premium because these carriers are losing a lot of money. Obviously, there's, you know, in California is an extreme case. It's pretty much a regulatory problem in that state. California is extremely insurable. Their price of insurance is extremely cheap today. You know, I think California pays about 50 cents of rate online to insure $100 of real estate, versus you look at Louisiana, you know, Florida, they're paying 100, maybe 130 cents of rate online to insure $100 of real estate. So California has plenty of room for price to get more expensive. Prices of insurance should go up because carriers need to have reasonable profits to continue writing. And unfortunately, there are just some, you know, there have historically been some really challenging regulatory dynamics for those carriers to continue to write business. Fortunately, those regulators seem to understand the kind of second and third order effects of insurance unavailability, which is a critical issue in that state today and drives a lot of the excess and surplus lines volumes you see in California. And so fortunately, we're starting to see deregulation in terms of pricing, you know, carriers allowed to raise prices in exchange for writing some more volume in high risk geographies, as well as some other recent changes to regulation. So the world is getting better. We expect carriers to start to make some reasonable profits. Some of them are making actually slightly unreasonable profits in some corners. Things are getting better. And hopefully we can communicate to the end customer that while the price of insurance going up is certainly painful in some geographies, it's really critical to making sure that those carriers can still at least operate and at least do their core job of providing payouts when and claims when it's time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, with 2,000 P&C companies in the US, at least that's the number that AM Best rates. Like, you got to think if companies are making money, even like unfair profits, that it's just a matter of time because this industry, if nothing else, is super competitive and they hammer each other on pricing all the time. So they do. It won't last, you know, and we had a pretty good overall in terms of hurricanes anyway last year in the U.S. But it just, you know, you just feel like it's a ticking time bomb with what's going on with Mother Nature. But anyway,
it's a little bit. The inspiration for the name of our business, you know, eventual. Mm-hmm. Some of these climate dynamics are eventualities. I am hopeful that we can mitigate some of these risks over time. But real mitigation, you know, removing carbon from the air, putting less carbon into the air, those things take a very long time to flow through and to be measurable. Yeah. And so some climate dynamics are eventualities. And one of those is that the price of insurance will go up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Just Dylan, a couple of questions again back to you, the human being, for a second. Do you have something? I like to ask my guests this, like something that's guiding you, a mantra or personal value or philosophy that's guided you in your career so far.
Yeah, I've picked up a lot of great guidance over, you know, my academic and my early professional careers from mentors and coworkers. A few of them. You know, number one that I think sounds really simple, but is like kind of non-obvious, especially when you're trying to build things quickly and build big businesses, is just like, be nice. I am constantly astounded by how long relationships last and how valuable those relationships are when you're nice. You know, I have some friends from middle school who are now distributing Premium Lock, a long time later. Wow. And that's surprising. And we were, you know, kind of friends in middle school. And now here we are. Same with college and then, you know, at Blackstone and with your investors and VCs and anyone else you run into. Like the world stays pretty small. And so be nice. And I think that pays dividends and is also just like a more fun way to live life. I also think there's, you know, there are certain paths in life that lead to kind of the death of curiosity. And so I think remaining curious and remaining energetic about the world is like really, really critical. And so I always try to ask questions and try to deeply understand anything that confuses me. And I think a lot of good things happen when you follow that path.
Yeah. And on to your first point about being nice, kindness goes a long way in a world that's just crazy right now with I'm right, you're wrong. So I like that one. I like that one very much. So as you look back, I mean, I know you got a long runway yet to go with your career, but is there any advice you might give your younger self when you're on the boat, getting off the boat, just getting out of school those years?
I think in my early career, I was probably a little self-conscious about asking for help and asking for guidance mm-hmm. from professionals or friends who are further along in their careers. I think now as someone who occasionally gets questions and you know from people thinking about starting risk transfer businesses or software businesses or other things in climate and in housing, you know, I think everyone loves to share advice and share battle scars about what works and what didn't work and what, you know, you spent a year wasting time on or didn't do. So I think, yeah, being open and willing to ask for help is kind of an obvious one, but a very important one. And I think it can shave years of struggle or you know, pivoting off of your life, which is good and helps you get to where you want to be faster.
Okay, cool. Is there, so what do you do for fun now? Like what, how do you recharge? Do you still get out on the water?
Look, frankly, we're trying to build a big business here, and there's a lot of work that goes into that. And so the short answer is there's not a lot of time outside of building eventual, building a large distribution network of agents all across the country takes a ton of time. I'm at conferences constantly. I spend most of my days, onboarding and demoing large agencies that are important and valuable to us. And so for the few hours that are free, I like to go to the gym. Sometimes I get in the sailboat, but yeah, eventual is really quite time consuming today, and it's very important to me. So the head stays down and stays in the business for the foreseeable future, which I love. It's fun, and we have a great team, and most of us are here in person in New York, and so really it doesn't feel like work. It feels like we're building something cool that people want, and we're just kind of going where our customers pull us, and we're having fun while doing it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, good on you, Dylan. Best of luck with the business, and thanks for being on the show.
Peter, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.